is a most unusual individual. His name is Tom Metzger. And we're going to be talking about his history and some of the organizations he's been involved with. Mr. Metzger, are you with me?
Good evening, Ken.
How are you?
I'm just fine, just fine. How are you?
Oh, doing pretty good. I tell you, we've got an unusually strong signal coming in through Skype tonight.
That is pretty good. Sounds good here.
Sounds like you're sitting in a room with me.
Yeah.
Well, let's get right to it, if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind.
You are the founding force, if you will, in what's known as WAR, the White Aryan Resistance. What is that?
Well, WAR was something that I was involved with for many years. However, about 5 years ago, we put WAR to bed and initiated what we call the Insurgent. And so we still have a lot of WAR things that were printed under WAR and so forth on our website. We actually have called ourselves, I have called myself the Insurgent for several years now.
Well, you've, I have to say that you've got a most unusual background. I always research those that I want to interview, and it's with some fascination that I've followed your career. You've been involved with both the Republican and the Democratic parties.
Yes, I've been both right and left.
You've been an activist and a candidate.
Yes.
You've been called a neo-Nazi.
Yeah.
You've Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan in what, California in the 70s?
I was a state director of the Klan in California. That's a national term, this Grand Wizard. In fact, when David Duke was running that outfit, he was the director too. I never used the term Grand Dragon. I always used the term state director.
And you've even been in the U.S. Army.
Yes, I was honorably discharged from the U.S. Army back in the 50s and was in Europe and was in a lot of electronics work for the Army and came back home. I worked for Douglas Aircraft on the rockets for them. I did a lot of equipment work for Douglas Aircraft in Santa Monica, California. I was there when they rolled the second stage of the space shot, the moon shot, off the assembly line.
My goodness. It you were even a member of the John Birch Society, according to
my
research.
For 9 years, yes. I was a chapter leader. Until they told me there were some books they didn't want me to read, and they didn't want my people in my chapter to read, and I said, nobody tells me what books to read, and I quit.
Hmm.
In fact, back then we had what we call the National Tax Rebellion going.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of us were fighting the income tax and refusing to pay taxes for the Vietnam War. My house was seized by the IRS for not paying my taxes because I wouldn't support the more killing of American troops for nothing in Vietnam. I got my house back later, but I've stood toe-to-toe with those guys for a long time.
When I was in California, I ran into a good many people who they called themselves the Patriot Movement, and one of their main tenets was they didn't pay taxes. They believed in common law as opposed to statutory law. And to be perfectly frank, some of their ideas were bizarre.
Well, I was never associated with the Patriot Movement. I ran into one once in a while who didn't want to have license plates and things like that, but I told them, I advised them they were going down the wrong road, and that was up to them. I was never associated with those people.
And you were a supporter of George Wallace.
Yeah, I ran his campaign in California. As I recall, twice I ran his headquarters in Southern California. Yes.
Well, let me ask you, in your opinion, if he had not been shot, do you think he could have won?
I doubt whether he would have won, but he would have given him a real run for the money, you know, sort of like Huey Long would have given FDR a run for his money, too, if he hadn't have been assassinated.
It's amazing how much a simple bullet has changed the future of this country or the potential future.
Many times.
And let's see, in the summer of 1979, you organized Klan Border Watch.
Yes, I thought it was...
What was that?
Well, I thought it was time we be active instead of just being right-wing types and need to go down to border and at least put on the guerrilla theater and show that we wanted to get these illegal aliens out. And if we had done what we advised way back then, we wouldn't be in the mess we are today. So I took men. We took... We built up patrol cars. We equipped them with radio. Wasn't very many of us, really, and so we went to the border and ran up and down the border, and of course we never grabbed illegal aliens, but we reported where they were. Of course, they were watching us closer than they watch illegal aliens, so if we'd have grabbed one of them, they'd have come at us federally. Well, they tried to come at us federally. The left wing mestizos came at me and said in federal court and said that we didn't have the right as a Klan to travel the highways under the old KKK laws. And the federal judge says, no, as long as they're not hurting anybody and just reporting, they've got just as much right on the highways as you do.
I bet that upset them.
Yes, it did. It didn't make the left wing very happy. I was continually being attacked, and we had several riots in California with the Marxists, John Brown Anti-Klan Committee, all those people. They used to love to attack us.
It seems almost like your presence acted like a red flag to a bull.
Well, anybody that stands up for something and doesn't back down is going to be a target. You see that every once in a while. Most people back down at the first little sign of trouble. But anybody who stands tall and says, come on, they really target you. Of course they targeted me, but they never got me.
Now, so much of what's going on, in my humble opinion,
yes,
and I'm not right, I'm not left, I try my best to be in the center.
That's hard to do. You know what they say about it, that yellow line in the middle of the road.
I've heard it many times. But, for example, the Fast and Furious, the government smuggling guns into Mexico. And now Mexico says 68,000 guns came in that they can track through Fast and Furious.
Sure. Well, the government's, we're living under a totally criminal, organized crime government. And that's all there is to it. Every facet of it is organized crime.
Well, what do you think is their ultimate goal?
A world of serfs, peasants, and a small percentage of the people running the whole show. They want the few people who are now gathering billions and billions and billions to themselves and bankrupting the middle class. They want it all. And they want to have the power over the whole world.
In other words, a one-world government.
Well, it's more like one-world corporation, because we don't have a government. We have a bunch of stooges up there that the corporations tell what to do. And that's just it. I mean, we've gone way beyond what started out when I was in the 60s and 70s. I used to think there was some hope for this government, this Washington, but I finally decided there is no hope. The only hope is for it to collapse.
You have to excuse me. So many people who heard you were going to be on the air have been inundating me with text messages wanting me to ask questions and what have you. And
Well, I have no problem with any question anybody wants to ask.
The problem is that most are so new to computers, it seems, that they can't seem to find you.
To find me?
Or to find my show and listen to you.
Oh, I see.
Which I find utterly confusing, because I've been doing this for 22 years, and it's simple.
Well, some of these people go absolutely, totally bonkers, and probably they're having a conniption fit and can't punch the right stuff into the computer. Because my enemies are my enemies. I know them. They know me.
Well, now, going back to your the research I did, In 1982, you wanted the Democratic Party senatorial nomination. You ran against Jerry Brown and unfortunately didn't beat him.
Well, first of all, I ran for Congress in the 43rd Congressional District in 1980 and won the Democratic nomination for Congress in the 43rd Congressional District, which was the largest district in the United States at the time. After that general election, they split that that section all up. So anyhow, and then 82, I did run in a field of nine, which Gore Vidal was in the running and Jerry Brown was running and nine people. I got about 80,000 votes, though.
So that's not bad.
Considering field of nine.
Especially in California, the land of fruits and nuts.
Oh, they went crazy when I ran for Congress. I mean, they came from every country in the world with their cameras and stuff. They couldn't believe it when the head of the Klan won the Democratic nomination in Southern California. I mean,
yeah, that had to cause a lot of confusion.
I don't think they've ever gotten over that.
Well, now in 1985, something happened that I still am half believing it's a misprint. You were invited to attend and speak at a rally of the black Muslim group, the Nation of Islam?
Yes, how that came about was we had contacts in Washington, D.C. that had some contacts with the Muslim representatives in Washington. And during that situation, I talked to one of these people I knew, and they said, well, would you be game to go to one of the gatherings of Louis Farrakhan in L.A.? And I said, sure, set it up. And so I went. I took about seven guys with me. I was treated with total respect. There was about 20,000 black people in the audience. And at one point, I had my security man go up and give him a $100 donation. And the media went crazy. Well, at that time, I had more respect for Farrakhan as being a racial separatist, and I'm a white separatist. So,
what exactly does that mean?
Most simply means that I believe in separate development, white development, and other people, blacks, develop in their way and have their own territorial land, their own government, their own police force, their own military. Simply, it's very simple. We believe in complete and utter separation from the black race, or the mestizo race, or the Asian race, and they can go ahead and do what they're interested in, and we won't bother them, they don't bother us. I think it would be a pretty good deal.
Well, now, you also had your own cable TV public access show.
Yes, I just did the last one that I've done just really a few weeks ago. We started in 83, and we're still producing just up until last month.
I'm in the process of trying to turn this show into a TV show.
Well, that's good. You should, yeah.
And I couldn't figure. I somehow associated your name with Geraldo, and I couldn't find that. Apparently, it was your son,
right,
who appeared on that show, and that's when the brawl broke out, and Geraldo got his nose broken.
Well, that's when Roy Ennis, who was the head of the CORE organization, Congress of Racial Equality, stood up, walked over. My son was sitting in his chair like you're supposed to do on these shows, put his hands around my son's neck and tried to choke him. And then my security people come out of the audience, and my one man chased Geraldo across the stage and proceeded to get on top of him and beat the hell out of him, break his nose. And so that, it was very simple. The guy's trying to kill my son. My son got up, was able to get to his feet. He kneed Ennis in the crotch, but that's hidden by the camera. And then everybody, a lot of people side with the person that's committing the crime. And that just don't seem like the American way to me. I always been cordial to people on TV shows. We may argue and yell at each other, but we never go and attack each other.
A lot of people don't realize that I'm doing a show, so they try to call me during my show.
I have.
So if you hear strange sounds, it's people calling in and them not being anybody who's asking questions.
Can I do a show every day, 1 hour every day? And I hit that problem all the time, people trying to call me while I'm doing my show.
Yeah, people that I hunt for all day will only call me during the 3 hours I'm on each night.
That's about the way it goes.
Now, the name Muligata Seron.
Yes.
Ethiopian, came to the U.S. to attend college.
Yes.
I think it was 1988, 1989 in that time frame. He was, if I'm not mistaken, he was murdered, and it was laid at the doorstep of the White Aryan, war, as it was called.
It wasn't at all. I mean, it was never investigated. I was never investigated as far as any murder or anything. That was simply a street fight that went bad. Incidentally, some of his buddies that were in the fight were some unsavory characters with pretty good criminal records, but they never bring that out. But anyhow, that was just a street fight that went bad. I mean, the black guys were on this narrow street, stopped and talking and drinking beer, and three of the other guys, skinheads, came up the street in their car, and they asked the blacks to move so they could get by, and they wouldn't do it, and they, you know, words happened. About that time, Muligata Seron was walking to his apartment door to go in his house, and the fight started, and he came back to get in the fight. Well, at one point, it was 2-on-1, and so another one of the skinhead guys got out of the car to get in a fight, and then finally, with 3-on-2, then the other fellow got out of the car with a club or baseball bat, and he hit Muligata Seron, and he died. Of course, it could have just as easily been the white guys that died.
Hmm.
But I was never charged with any connection with that. They weren't. I didn't even know these people. However, I supported it as much as I could, and in fact, I could have walked away and never had a problem if I hadn't helped support them, because it was nothing but a street fight that went bad.
Well, a lot of what I've read about Morris Dees and the Southern Poverty Law Center, apparently, and this is a comment I heard at a talk years ago, the White Aryan resistance is the root of all evil.
Well, only when he wants some publicity so he can raise some more money. He can go for a couple of years and never even mention my name, and all of a sudden something comes up, and he thinks he can use it for his sucker list. I mean, he's taken in millions of dollars off the suckers. He's used the Klan for decades to raise money, and if he hadn't had the Klan to raise money off of, he wouldn't have gotten anywhere. His buddy Andrew Young now is on a witness in the trial with Edwards down in Georgia, and is showing that Young was one of Dee's main guys. In fact, he was connected to the Southern Poverty Law Center. And, of course, he was defrauding that whole campaign out of hundreds of thousands of dollars to build himself a mansion house, Andrew Young. And these guys are crooks. But, if you get into the uplifting of the downtrodden business, you can make a lot of money.
Mm.
And the people who don't like a racial separatist or a racist like me, they believe anything they tell them, anything.
So you're saying that the Southern Poverty Law Center is not the man on the white charger that he makes himself out to be.
Well, they got $200 or $300 million at least in the Southern Trust Fund squirreled away, and the people he defends hardly get nickels and dimes. He got a judgment against me, and he never got more than nickels and dimes from me. He did get my house, but that was the main thing he got, but beyond that, he got very little. So he don't care. He's got one of the biggest mailing lists in the country, and he sends out all this scare material, and all the little old ladies send him the money, you know.
Mm. Well, we're going to need to go to break, so I can ask you to hang on, sir. We shall be back.
Sure.
Right after these messages. And we are back. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show right here on the one and only Borderland Radio Network, and we're coming to you live from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas, gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, Mr. Metzger, I have a caller who is absolutely dying to ask you a question.
Could I make one point before we go
by
to that?
By all means, please.
Well, just to end up on that Morris Dees situation, do you remember in history back when the Freedom Bus pulled into Montgomery, Alabama, and it was attacked by a mob and a Klan?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, well, you guess who became the Klan, became the Klan's attorney after that? Morris Dees.
You're kidding.
But he found out the Klan didn't have any money, so he changed sides pretty quick.
Quite an interesting background to that gentleman that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah, there's a lot of things about him. One of these days they're going to catch up with this fraud, and he's going to, I can't believe how he's hoodwinked the IRS this far.
Unbelievable. Well, let me see if I can get the guest on.
Sure.
You're on the Ken Hudnall Show.
Oh, how are you doing, Ken? How are you doing, Mr. Metzger?
That voice sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Sounds to me like you might be an 18-wheeler.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I just thought I'd call in and say you're both doing. As far as Morris Dees, I remember back in the 90s, when all this stuff was going on, you said that you're coming after us now and after the mainstream, like right-wing people later. And even Dees was after Michael Savage a few years ago, you know. What you said back then came true now.
He ran out of the Klan to attack. There was no more Klan around to attack, so except very occasionally. But so he's jumped around to the Patriot movement and everybody, and the Right to Lifers and everybody. And so that's his look. You think he don't like violence, he loves violence, because when violence happens, he jumps in and takes a case and makes a fortune.
Yeah, he's all in it for the money. Now, you notice, do you see him going after La Raza or Mexican Mafia, you know?
No, I don't. I don't see him going after a lot of people that are on a different side, mostly Marxist types.
Well, of course, you know. And he'll continue to do this, you know, for the rest of his life. And it's just disgusting what he's done, what he did to Richard Butler, you know, in Aryan Nations. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Well, yeah, but one thing he finally figured it out. If you're going to kill me, I'll be dead. But otherwise, you're not taking me down. And Morris Dees took my house, took my business, took everything he could take. But I kept right on doing what I do, and I haven't changed a bit. And I was publishing a newspaper a week after he got the judgment against me.
Well, you know, a few years ago I talked to the guy that was running the Aryan Nations after Pastor Butler died, and he actually gave a plaque to Morris Dees saying that thanks for reviving the Aryan Nations because you kept their name as far as publicity, and you got it started again.
Well, a lot of groups like Morris Dees do more to give publicity to the racial cause than anybody else. That's true. I used to say, don't touch Morris Dees. We need him.
Go ahead, Ken.
I was just going to say it's interesting to consider how many little subplots are going on behind the scenes that the general public never knows about.
Well, that's because the general public is, they're sheep. They don't really give a damn. And so that's why their country's going to hell. I mean, you know, there's nothing that couldn't be straightened out pretty easily in this country. But the people, they don't know who they're voting for. They follow the worst people in the world, and so they deserve what they get.
Yeah, there are times it does seem that way.
Yeah, I don't sympathize with them anymore. I preached all these years when I'm blue in the face about a lot of things besides race. I'm very anti-corporate, anti-international banking. I'd like to see those guys that ripped us off from the banks in New York jailed immediately, and I'd like to see half the presidents, the last two presidents, tried for war crimes, because they're war criminals. The attack on Iraq and all that stuff is a war crime.
And then, of course, we had one president lie to the Congress and the Supreme Court, but that was okay, because he did it for a good cause.
Well, politicians are born liars. They don't get to that point without being born liars and crooks. Every president in my lifetime, I can open up the books and show you where they were rats. Every one of them. And they love war too. These guys, they love war because they know they get people excited and, you're going to protect your homeland. So we'll go bomb the hell out of these people 10,000 miles away to defend your homeland. What a bunch of war criminals.
Well, now in 2010, you took out an advertisement in the Warsaw Times Union to announce your intention to challenge U.S. Representative Mark Souter.
Yeah, that was a dumb thing. I shouldn't have done that. I did it as a write-in candidate, and I pretty much swore off of politics, period. But I would just caught me at the wrong moment, and I got all excited. Maybe I had a couple too many beers. I don't know. But it was a ridiculous. I'm telling you, I thought California voters were dumb, but back here they're even dumber. I don't care. A Republican around here could walk up and shoot the Pope, and they still vote for him.
Well, we got the reverse situation here with there's one Democratic incumbent that I've tangled with, and somebody pointed out to a group of people that the man was a crook, and one of them said, well, that's fine, but he's our crook.
Yeah, that's right, and that's the position a lot of ne'er-do-well people who are trying to climb up and get the power take. They say, yeah, okay, I know that. I know he's a crook, but he's my crook, and he's going to help me make a lot of money or put me in power. But the people, the common people, the working man is just screwed by both sides. He doesn't have a chance. I mean, if voting would change things, they'd make it illegal.
Well, you're right about that.
No, this is over. The experiment in the Republic is over. We are living under empire now, and the only thing we could pray for is the destruction of the empire, because this has no relation to what our founding fathers were into at all. This is a total criminal, corporate, fascist government.
And it doesn't matter which one, which party. If Romney goes in there, they'll just take the strings off of Obama and put them on Romney, and he'll be their new puppet.
Look, Obama's got $9 billion to play with, and the other guy, he's going to have probably $8 or $9 billion, or maybe $5 billion. It's all whoever spends the most money wins.
Yeah, and the corporates that run everything, the country anyway, will just whoever gets in there will be their puppet. Both of those parties are equally trash. You know that, right?
Well, obviously. When you're voting, you give the system respect, and I don't have any respect for the system whatsoever, and I won't vote anymore. I just won't vote because I feel like a criminal if I vote for either side.
Yeah, because they're all criminals.
Well, they never do what they promise, and they do. Look at how they yell at each other during the primary, and then all of a sudden they kiss and make up. It's such a scam. No, it's all over. Now all we have to do is wait on the Civil War. It's coming.
Well,
There's no doubt about that.
I'd heard you make statements like that in a couple of times. And
yes.
What makes you believe there's a Civil War coming?
Well, there's no doubt about it. The rich get richer. The poor get poorer. We've loaded the country up with 20 million mestizos out of Central and Mexico. We've got massive amounts of Asians coming in. We've got, and these people have different social backgrounds, different racial backgrounds, different desires and everything. And they're going to try to, after Nixon, we've shipped out 55,000 factories out of the United States. And since Nixon went over and kissed the red Chinese Mao Zedong. And so we're not producing anything. There's going to be less and less jobs. All this recovery is nothing but crap. First, it'll be an economic outbreak. People will be rioting for food, rioting for housing, rioting for who knows what. Then there's going to be the racial war going on and the economic war, and it's going to be one of the craziest civil wars you've ever seen. That's why there are thousands of Americans that are leaving the country, even giving up their citizenship and moving to other countries because they could see it coming.
Do you have any estimate of when you think it will start?
No, might not even be my lifetime. I'm 74 now. It better happen pretty quick or I'm not going to be much involved. All I know is I planted my seeds all across this country. And so that was my job. And if I'm gone, those seeds have sprouted and grown up and now they're in adulthood and they know what to do. See, I told our people who respect and believe in me, I told them 20 years ago, go underground, keep your mouth shut, don't join organizations, don't wear uniforms, don't wave flags, even pretend you're something you're not, and wait. And they're waiting. So that's, and there's a lot of people of other groups that are doing the same thing.
Well, I've had a number of folks tell me that.
Well, it could happen. It could happen any minute. Or it could, see, right now the government's trying to do this crime syndicate's trying to do a mop-up deal where they can draw people out. They want to draw people like me out to where I'll do something wild and they could throw me in a federal pen. That's what they want to do now. They want to get all the first people that are going to get upset and do something and get them out of the way. So that when the real battle comes, they'll be out of the way. So I preach to our people, just keep your powder dry, keep your mouth shut, just get along and like that, and don't get involved in all these groups and right wing or whatever groups, and you'll be all right. Take care of your family, store food, store ammo, store a few guns, try to live outside the city, you know, things like that.
It sounds like the preachings of a man named Mel Tappan back in the late 80s. He wrote several books. One was Survival Guns, and did an entire series of articles for Guns and Ammo. Pretty much along the lines of what you just outlined. Well, we're going to have to go to break, so I'm going to put you on hold, and I will be back right after these messages. Well, as far as the world knows, you all are on hold.
Well, I'll tell you, okay. You better hang up that, my trucker friend, because there's a lot of background noise.
All right. Well, I'll be in touch with you soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, Earl has, been on pins and needles about, your interview.
Well, I wouldn't encourage him to sign off, but it was a lot of background noise.
Yeah, he's one of those with no computer, so he went to a Kinko's and rented a computer.
Uh-huh.
So that he could listen to the show.
Oh, wow. But sound like he's in his truck.
Yeah, it does. But he's sitting at a Kinko's.
Oh, must be a noisy Kinko's.
we've got some that stay pretty busy around the clock here.
Sounded like road noise to me.
Probably has the doors propped open because the one I'm pretty sure he's at.
Yeah.
You'd think it's been in the middle of the Sahara.
Uh-huh. It's been a long time since I've been in El Paso. I was there in about 1961, passing through, yeah. Went down to Juarez, had a few drinks. Some of us guys came from Indiana. We were moving to California, so we went through El Paso and said, well, let's go down to Juarez and have a few drinks. We did that, and then we took off to L.A., but that's the last time I've been around El Paso.
Well, if you go to Juarez now, you take your life in your hands.
Well, it was fairly peaceful back then, but we didn't have any trouble.
And they brought in the Mexican military, and turns out most of them are gang members, so.
Well, they're going to go where
it was wild.
They're going to go where the money is, just like our politicians. I mean, they go where the money is.
I agree.
And with NAFTA driving the Mexican peons off of their little farms by screwing the price of the grain and corn and stuff up and literally screwing the Mexican peon right off his little farm to where they have to come running up here, well, what can you expect? The guy says, well, I'll join the cartel. I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This is all NAFTA. This is all the United States government causes all this stuff. I mean, they should legalize pot, legalize cocaine, as far as I'm concerned, and get the government out of the business, because the government just makes it worse.
Yeah, in fact, during Vietnam, the main guy over the running of drugs into the U.S. was Richard Armitage, a member of the CIA and later the State Department.
Well, yeah, and then you had the guys flying it into Mena Airport there in Arkansas. Clinton knew all about it. Oliver North is a war criminal, too. Reagan should have been in prison. He's a war criminal, too. We had guys watching that Mena Airport. We had them keeping an eye on that Mena Airport all the time. We knew a lot. We saw the CIA planes coming in there. Of course, they didn't have CIA on them, but.
Yeah, in those days, it was usually Air America.
Yeah, right. No, this country is just, it's gone. It's gone. The only thing now we can look for is Phoenix Rising. Maybe it'll go all the way down and come back up. I don't know.
Well, anything is possible. I'm just hoping when the shooting starts, I'm pretty much left alone.
I don't know.
But I doubt it.
I don't know whether I feel too safe in El Paso.
No, the only thing that keeps the cartel from coming in right now is too many people in El Paso have concealed weapons, and they want to take that away from us.
Yeah, well, the people are going to have to learn to defend themselves or they don't have a chance. I mean, that's it.
Yep. Well, we're getting ready to come back from break.
Okay.
And we will talk a little bit more about all the things you've been up to.
Sure.
I want to know what you'd do if you got elected to Congress.
You're going to ask that once we start the show again?
Oh, yes.
Oh, did we start already?
No.
Oh, okay.
We're getting ready to.
Yeah, I'll answer that right after we go on.
All right. Okay, we are back. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. My guest this hour is the one and only Tom Metzger.
Hi, Ken.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Doing fine. You know, you were asking about what I'd do if I went to had I gone to Congress.
Yes.
Probably would have been the worst thing I ever did because I was told in no uncertain terms by the Jewish Defense League that if I set one foot in that Congress, I'd have been a dead man. They had a contract out on me. Of course, this is not the first time there was a contract out on me, but that was a story. Because I would have raised so much hell that the Congress would have thrown me out. I mean, they won't allow anybody, you know, they've got their own ethics and all that stuff. And they've got it wrapped up to where if you tell the truth, they'll throw you out. They can vote you out even though you've been voted in. You know, there was one congressman from Wisconsin way back in the last century, early part of the last century, that won a congressional seat three or four times, and they kicked him out every time, even though he was the legitimate congressional candidate. He won the election, and they kicked him out of the Congress four times.
Well, I noticed in 1980, you won the Democratic Party nomination for the U.S. House of Representatives in the San Diego district.
Yeah, I got 54,000 votes, yeah.
You changed your party registration from Republican to Democrat earlier in the year, and the local Democratic Party chairman refused to accept your candidacy.
Well, let me tell you a little funny story about that. After I won that, and I was certified by Marge Fong Yu, who was Secretary of State, certified as the winner of that primary, I was able to, by law, to appoint three people to the County Central Committee, and I was, by law, supposed to be able to appoint three people to the State Central Committee. So anyhow, it comes time for the State Central Committee to meet, and I take my people that I've appointed, and off we go to Sacramento. I get to the door, and guess who's there? A cop and Nancy Pelosi. Went back when she was a little bit younger. Nancy Pelosi and the cops refused to let me enter the place and take my legal seat and to bring my appointees in, which was totally unconstitutional and illegal. But when I go out to get an attorney for my civil rights, forget it. So I have a long memory of Nancy Pelosi.
And what was her legal basis for doing that?
At that point, there was none. I mean, she just barred me. And then I went back to San Diego County and attempted to take my seat on the County Central Committee. And the state police, they had come onto the stage and dragged me off. Their reasoning was they had the power to do it. And that's why I give up on politics altogether. You have to have the power one way or another. If you don't have some kind of power, you got nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
They can disobey the law and come up, and then their newspaper buddies and their corporate buddies in the news go right along with it. Oh, yeah, I guess that's okay. But if I had have been possibly someone of a different color, they'd have been a national news story. How dare they take this man? He was legally constituted and registered by the Secretary of State and everything. How could they do this? We're going to sue him for $40 million for you, Mr. Metzger. And at one central committee meeting of the Democrat Party, they tried to kill me. One guy stood up with a 25 automatic and was all ready to blast me, and some undercover cops drug him down. I've had a lot of fun.
The same people who say you can't discriminate.
Oh, of course they do. That's all baloney. There is no equality. There are no rights. You only have privileges that the strong and powerful grant you. And if you step out of line, they'll take your privileges away. All this mythology of democracy and equality and your rights, it's all baloney. Just like George Carlin says. I'm a fan of George Carlin. He puts it the way it is.
He did have some interesting things to say.
Well, he just said it's all bullshit. It's all bullshit. I don't know why you're supposed to say that on your show, but it's true. It's all nonsense, and poor people keep going every 4 years over and over and putting these guys in office, and they're all crooks.
But unfortunately, if you try to tell them that, they'll lynch you.
Well, then you have to go on to someone who will listen to you. Somebody asks me a question, I'll tell them the answer. If they don't want to listen, I say, well, get out of my way. I'm going to somebody who will listen to me, and there's a lot of people who do listen to me. But I don't waste my time with the sheep.
Well, I have to say you have had an extremely interesting life.
I've always said if the government doesn't like me, they shouldn't have created me. Because every step of the way, fighting the IRS, fighting the government, fighting the electoral system, fighting the parties, fighting the courts, every time I went through that stuff, it made me harder. So now I went from a little simple right-wing conservative way back in the 60s to a person who calls himself an insurgent opposed totally to the government. Now, it took me quite a while, but I got there.
Well, now, in June of 2009, the BATF raided your house.
Yeah.
No arrests were made.
Nope.
No information was ever released about what the reasons for the raid. So what were the reasons for the raid?
Well, the way I got it, they were looking for bomb-making material. And anybody in law enforcement knows I've never been involved in that kind of stuff. I don't even stockpile guns. I don't tell anybody to stockpile guns. How many guns could you shoot at once anyhow? No, they tried to tie me to some guys I knew and had been friendly with that got in trouble, but they had no basis for raiding my house at all. I was laughing at them. It's a wonder they didn't shoot me. They come to my front gate, seven or eight of these guys in ninja outfits with face masks on with submachine guns. And I opened the gate and they went filing past me, and I said, what the hell, you're making a movie? So then they had a whole bunch of more agents out there. Then they had the local sheriff out there. There must have been 15 carloads out in my parking lot, and my wife and I looked at each other and said, what the hell is with these people? They asked her, you got any bomb-making equipment? Well, I got some Vigoro for my plants. No, they tore, and I said to the guys, I said, well, here's the key. We're going out to breakfast. You lock up when you're done.
You would think sometimes they feel foolish, but they don't seem to.
Well, there's a lot of them that know the score, and they really probably have to bite their tongue. I don't believe that all these guys that work for the government are bad. Some of them are our people that are undercover. I told young guys to get into the federal agencies years ago. I said, you know, come on, if they open up for jobs on internal security or homeland security, apply for the job. As long as you've had no open membership in any group, if you don't go to any of these meetings where they're full of informants, if you don't put a bunch of tattoos all over yourself, and if you've got a decent education, go in there, burrow in. You can do us more good on the inside.
Hmm.
It's just like any kind of a struggle in a country goes through. You've got the people you send in to be inside, and you got your people undercover, and then you got a few people like me that does the blabbing.
The target.
Yeah. I'm the lightning rod.
Well, there's certainly been a lot of it.
Yeah.
From looking at the history.
Well, if they really thought I had the power that a lot of people think I do, they'd have killed me a long time ago. I'm still small potatoes. They have the press to make fun of me and insult me and tell a bunch of lies about me and try to get as many people not to listen to me as they can. I mean, I couldn't get a radio show on, or even if I had the money, I couldn't buy regular radio time. I couldn't buy regular TV time. I can't even buy regular newspaper ads unless I'm running for office.
Why not?
I'm frozen out. I used to lecture colleges back in the day, back in the 70s. I used to be invited to high schools and universities to address and talk to the kids on about, I guess it was the late 70s, early 80s, the word went out. Don't let this guy talk. He's too effective. Don't put him on TV. He's too effective. Go over to Central Casting and find a couple of these numbnuts that'll put on a Klan robe or a Nazi uniform and probably didn't even graduate from high school. Put those guys on TV, but don't put that Metzger on TV.
Well, interestingly enough, in the Deep South, growing up, I knew people who were proud of the fact they graduated from the sixth grade, or they had never been more than 50 miles away from home. In fact, some of the worst trouble I got in was when the local he called himself the Grand Dragon of the KKK.
Yeah.
Came on my front porch and told me I was going to do something, and I threw him off, and turned out he was a state representative.
Oh, my. Yeah, that could happen. I lived in the South at one time. My parents moved down to Florida. They built a restaurant and a bar down there. I lived there a while, went to school down there. But other than that, I've not been much in the South. You see, my position on the whole thing was that the Civil War was a great, horrible thing that happened between two economic systems, the slaveocracy and the northern industrial people and all the poor working class people paid the price. Now, my position is to say about black slavery. Well, if I'd have been back there on the East Coast when they started bringing slaves in, I'd have turned those ships around. They never would have landed. There would never have been slavery in this country because there would not have been slaves. That southern aristocracy is the same kind of aristocracy that operates in New York City. In fact, they used to deal together all the time. So I'm a working class kind of guy. And when they ask poor working guys to go out and get their heads blown off or go to Vietnam or go to Iraq, I grit my teeth. I try to talk them out of it if I can at all. Because you're just fighting for the corporations. I mean, if somebody invades Indiana or even my block, I'll be out there fighting. If they try to invade my country, I'm going to be out there fighting arm and shoulder right beside everybody else. But I'm not going to be involved in wars that take our troops all over the world. We got 800 military installations around the world. 800. We can't even afford to have two or three. No, this is like Rome in the last days. That's all it is.
Yeah.
But as long as there's so much greed and people hell-bent on power over other people, it's going to go right. It's just going to...
Unfortunately,
Well, we're like on a big plane and it's lost power and we're headed to the ground and there's nothing much you can do about it. Now, if a few of us survive after the crash, well, maybe we can do something about it. Try to get out of there.
All you can do is right before it hits, jump up.
Yeah, right. But I don't want anybody. Pardon me?
I started to say we've done an hour.
That's great.
And it's been enjoyable.
Enjoyable here too, Ken. I appreciate the chance to speak to you and just trying to tell people the straight stuff. They may hate to hear it. My mother, when I was a kid, used to give me castor oil. I hated it, but it helped me out. that Americans need castor oil instead of all this BS they're getting from these politicians. And they're getting it. We got over 20% of people unemployed, and people are not even working for a job. We haven't even, now they want to double the price, double the interest on student loans. Well, here's what I say. You tell those corporations that the political parties helped them get out of the country so they can make a fortune off other poor people in other countries. Tell those guys everything you pick sent back here from China, we're going to put a big tariff on it. And out of that tariff, we're going to run our universities and colleges. We're going to have kids going to college for nothing. And you're going to pay for it because you robbed this country blind. Now, if you don't want to do that, well, stay over there and none of your products will get in. Now, if you want to come back here and be part of the country and support the colleges and universities and underwrite their education and treat the working people right, you're welcome to come back. Otherwise, I hope the revolutionary groups in these other countries burn you to the ground.
There's
only one thing those people understand is that they lose their toys. You got to take their toys away from them.
That does seem to get people's attention. I agree with that.
You can kill a lot of those people, corporate leaders, but that don't change. There's always 16 guys waiting to take his place. But you take their toys away from them.
Oh, of course.
I support any of these uprisings in other countries where they're burning these plants down, because I say every plant you burn down means that maybe another job will come back to the United States. Scare the hell out of these corporates in these foreign countries. But yet there's all these people will say, oh, we got to send the army over there to save the corporations. Screw the corporations. They've been screwing us for a long time.
Absolutely correct, sir. Well, I do thank you for being with me. I've got my next segment ready to come up. I still have to go to break. But whenever you want to talk some more, I invite you to come on back.
Well, I appreciate that, Ken, and we'll do that one of these days. And you take it easy and watch your back, because there's enemies everywhere.
Don't I know it.
You're so close to those cartels down there. You need the New York mob to come in and back you up. Later.
Thanks a lot, sir.
Did you ever see that movie Fist with Sylvester Stallone? Oh, you ought to rent it. That's one of my favorite movies is Fist. That shows you what you got to get down and dirty to let these people know what's going to happen, okay?
That one I don't remember, but I will rent it.
Great. I'll talk to you about it next time, huh?
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.